This is Fresh Air. My guest has been at the center of literary and political life in the Philippines. F. Chenil Jose is one of the Philippines' most celebrated writers. He also runs the best bookshop in Manila. He's opposed censorship as the founder of his country's chapter of PEN, the International Writers Organization. And with his magazine, Solidarity, he's created a forum for Asian writers to discuss politics and the arts. His best-known work in the Philippines is the Rosales Saga, about a family of settlers thrown off their land by members of the Filipino elite. This actually happened to Jose's own family before he was born. They ended up landless agricultural workers. For the first time, one of Jose's books has been published in the United States. Random House has just brought out his novellas, Three Filipino Women. And next year, they'll begin publication of his series, The Rosales Saga. We spoke to him earlier today from Manila and asked if he'd always wanted to be published in the States.
Oh, a long time ago, that was in the 50s when I first went there. I went there and showed my manuscript to the late Malcolm Cowley, and he liked it very much. And we went to New York, and we saw Anne Watkins, the literary agent, and she also liked it too. Then they made suggestions, you know, on how I should redo it. So I went home very anxious to follow their instructions. And then it occurred to me, you know, that I wasn't writing for Americans, that my audience was right here at home. So that really sort of made me, I think, a Filipino writer.
Is literature important in the Philippines? Do a lot of people read, and do a lot of people read serious literature?
Very good question. You know, our national hero, Jose Rizal, you know, wrote two novels, and these novels sort of inspired the Filipinos to revolt against Spain. They're very good Victorian novels. Unfortunately, we are a nation of non-novel enthusiasts.
So who reads your books in the Philippines?
I sell quite a lot at home because most of my books are used in the high schools and in the colleges for outside reading material. And then also because I've been in this racket for such a long time, that's the kind of following, you know.
Mm-hmm. You are a publisher, an editor, a writer, and a bookstore owner. Did the way that you see your role in the Philippines change after the Marcos regime ended?
No, because even during the Marcos regime, even if it was very tough on me and my friends, you know, economically, you know, and psychologically, we managed. You know, as a matter of fact, I'm a little bit nostalgic about the Marcos regime because the writers then had someone to fight, you know, and we're sort of united. See, now it's one for himself, and really, we have failed to use the freedom that we have regained, not only in terms of better writing. You know, Marcos said something very interesting. You know, he really didn't go after writers because he knew that Filipinos do not read. He went after movie people, you know, and the journalists, you know, who had a wider audience rather than the creative writers.
You founded in 1958 the Philippines branch of PEN, the International Writers Organization, which works for free speech for writers. What motivated you to organize a Philippines chapter of PEN?
Well, what happened was I happened to be in London in 1955, you know, and I got to meet the international PEN secretary there, David Kerver. He's dead. Oh, incidentally, that was the year that I also went to the United States and got to meet some of your very famous writers like Robert Frost and, as I told you, Malcolm Cowley. In any case, when I got back, I felt that it was perhaps good for us also to be a member of the International PEN Club, and that's what I did. Good in the sense that it opened for us exchanges with writers not only in the region but all over the world.
Do you think writers in the Philippines were very isolated?
Yes, in a sense, yes. But at the same time, the influence of the United States, you know, its literature is very strong here. You know, the literary fads that have swept the United States for for the last 30 years also reached our shores, or rather belatedly, the new criticism, all that sort of thing. You know, for instance, there are many Filipino writers who are more familiar with the stories that come out in The New Yorker than the stories that are published locally.
Are you one of those writers?
Am I one of those writers?
Yeah, who's more busy reading The New Yorker than local literature?
No, heaven forbid.
Right.
As a matter of fact, I don't like The New Yorker stories at all.
Why not?
Oh, they're not stories. You know, nothing happens. And much of the literature, I think, that's coming out of the United States now, you know, is very trivial, the trivia of suburbia, I would call it. Don't get me wrong, I've always appreciated American literature, particularly that period that was the New England Renaissance, you know. The writers in the United States who appeal to me now are the Jewish and the black writers. You know, there's a certain melancholy to what they write that I cannot find in many of the contemporary writers in the United States.
I want to get back to when you founded the Filipino chapter of PEN, the International Writers Organization. What were the issues then for writers in the Philippines?
Oh, several. One was the nationalist issue, because even now I feel that we are not nationalist enough. I know that nationalism is a dirty word in many other countries, you know, but this is a different place altogether. We Filipinos have become very alienated from our own society.
So where do you see writers fitting into your feelings that there needs to be more nationalism, a greater sense of nationalism in the Philippines?
I attribute the lack of it to the overriding and sometimes stifling American influence on our own culture. You know, you are so pervasive, you know. If you come to Manila, you will really know what I mean. God, everywhere, Coca-Cola signs, you know.
On some level, you must have mixed feelings about that, because I know that you've read so much American literature over the years, and that American literature means a lot to you.
Oh, of course it does. As a matter of fact, my greatest inspiration is that period when your writers were freeing themselves from the European romantic tradition to celebrate America. You know, Walt Whitman, Herman Melville, Emerson, all these American greats. You know, they're my idols.
But you think that's what Filipinos need to do, too, to kind of separate themselves from the people who ruled them.
Yes. This is what I'm saying, you know, that we also need to move away from this stifling American influence on our culture, because otherwise we will not be able to produce something that is ours. It will always be derivative, you know.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Frankie Chenille Jose, one of the Philippines' leading writers, publishers, editors, and bookstore owners. And his first book to be published in the United States has just been released. It's called Three Filipino Women. It's three novellas. And we're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Joining us by phone from the Philippines is Frankie Chenille Jose, a writer, publisher, editor, bookstore owner, and also founder of the Philippine chapter of PEN, the International Writers Organization. Now, growing up poor as an agricultural worker, how did books get to be important in your life?
Oh, my mother encouraged me to read. You know, in that little village where I was born, you know, I was always with books. She'd go around the town looking for books for me to read, you know. And there were instances when we didn't have a light in the house because the kerosene lamp was empty. So I'd walk to the far corner and read late into the night under the electric street lamp.
So you had to read outside?
Yes.
Did your mother approve of that, or did she try to get you back home?
Oh, when by about midnight, she'd tell me to go back home and sleep, you know. The first novels I read were the novels of Rizal. And then I read Willa Cather's My Antonia. That's the third novel I read.
And what effect did that have on you?
Oh, very much. I was very impressed by it, you know. For many years, I believed that Willa Cather was a man, you know. And then I read Don Quixote, too. You know, that's a very thick book. These are the first four novels I've read.
You've written some stories about the choice between pursuing wealth or pursuing one's ideals. Has that ever been a choice for you, a dilemma that you've been faced with?
Let me put it this way. I've always wanted to be very rich.
Well, actually, you once said you wanted to be very rich, but writing about the poor.
Oh, I said that too. But in this country, you cannot get rich writing books.
Now, at the same time that you would really like to be rich, you've written a lot about the elites who have oppressed the Filipino people. Who are those elites now? Have those elites changed recently?
A shortcut to achieving wealth in this country is through politics, you know, because once you are politically powerful, it goes without saying that you can do almost anything you like the way Marcos did it, see? Now, there's old money here too, but a lot of this old money, especially those who have great fortunes. I can only recall, I think it was Balzac who said it, that behind every great fortune is a great crime.
In your novella, Platinum, one of the characters quotes a now famous saying, although I can't remember who originally said it. He says, if one is not a communist when one is 18, he has no heart. If he's still a communist at 40, he has no head. Do you think your politics have changed as you've gotten older? You're approaching 70 now.
Yeah, three more years and I'll be 70. Isn't that sad, huh? Well, no. I'm still hoping for a nationalist revolution. I'm still very much a populist. I still think that what this country needs is good Marxist analysis, but non-Marxist solutions to its problems. And in a sense, you know, I still feel very, very young with my ideal.
How did you start writing? You left college to take a job, but how did you end up writing?
Well, I wanted to be a doctor because I was in the medical corps during the war. You know, but I wasn't very good in biochemistry. I flunked it. So I had to do the next best thing, you know, to earn a living as a writer, and that's what I did. I went into journalism after I flunked medical school.
Were you glad that that's how it ended up?
Oh, no. You see, I've always wanted to be a doctor, and even now I'm a frustrated doctor, you know. As a matter of fact, when I failed, I almost committed suicide.
Really?
Yeah. A traumatic experience.
Well, you would have made a lot more money as a doctor.
Well, you see, from the very beginning, I knew I wasn't going to be rich, you know, so it's enough that I'd be comfortable.
Right.
Long time ago, I made that decision, you know, because when I was in journalism and I wrote this down in one of my stories, I could have easily become an executive of one of the biggest companies in this country, you know, and I sometimes tell my kids, if I got the job in 1950, we'd be vacationing in Europe every year and I'd be playing golf, you know.
But that's not what happened.
No, because that offer was given to me in the 50s.
So you turned down that offer?
I turned it down.
Why?
Well, I decided that it was more fun being a writer. I'd get more self-satisfaction. And being a writer provides me more honesty with myself. You see, when you get into work in a big corporation, especially this corporation where I was supposed to be in, I'd have to be a hypocrite, you know. I'd even have to learn Spanish, you know.
What would be wrong about learning Spanish?
Well, it's not bad, but because it's the language of the Filipino elite, you know. But the reason is, why should I?
When was the last time you went back to the village where you grew up?
Every so often, you know, I I go back to this village sometimes when I'm on my way to the north. It's a kind of pilgrimage when I want to look back, to remember, to draw sustenance from this wellspring. I go there, I drop by and look at the place. It has deteriorated so much, it has now become an urban slum, you know. And the friends of my childhood who are still very much alive, I look at them and see them so old and so defeated, you know. And I ask myself every so often why I was able to free myself from that village and why they haven't been able to do so. Aside from that, I like listening to my own language, you know, because my language is beautiful, and I'm really sorry that I can't use it anymore. But I still try to use equivalent phrases and idioms and terms, you know, in English as much as I can.
Efshaniel Jose spoke with us from Manila. His book, Three Filipino Women, has just been published in the States by Random House. This is Fresh Air.